Let's get to our guest. Jim McCafferty is with us. Jim is head of APAC Equity Research at Nomura. He's on the line from Hong Kong. Rather than focus on the midterm elections here in the state, I want to play to your strength, Jim, and this idea that China may be at least sometime in the near future willing to pivot away from COVID zero. Brian was talking about some of the euphoria that seems to have been building in markets across the APAC based on that notion. Do you buy into it?
Well, I think the euphoria you just mentioned has come from a very, very low base. But let me give you some on-the-ground understanding of what's going on. I think, firstly, in Hong Kong, where I am right now, I just wanted to give your listeners a bit of a context. I've been traveling a little bit in the last few weeks in the UK and Japan, got back into Hong Kong a week ago, and Hong Kong does appear to be back to almost normality relative to European geographies or Japan. Travelers arriving in Hong Kong can go straight into work situations. There's a health monitoring period, but it's certainly very different from where things were back in 2021 and 2020. I think in the context of mainland China, I had a call last night with our Shanghai office, with our chief equity strategist, Gao Ting. And what he said is there's a bit of a kind of COVID enforcement fatigue happening in Shanghai. So while in theory, the government is still mandating this zero COVID policy, the implementation is beginning to, I think, unravel a little bit, which does suggest to me that China's perhaps identifying that the practicalities of zero COVID policy are just difficult to implement.
And in terms of how you've seen investors kind of position over the last couple of days, despite the fact that China keeps saying it is unswervingly sticking with COVID zero, it seems that nobody wants to be behind this rally. What kind of pop do you think we will eventually see when there is confirmation that they are leaving those policies behind?
Okay, I think there's a real issue with the international investors and how they approach China. I think a lot of fund managers and investment professionals like China, especially the valuations. They identify that China is a force to be reckoned with from an economy point of view, but its market just doesn't stack up that way on valuation metrics. However, the asset owners are preventing those investors from actually participating in the Chinese market. And this is led by some of the kind of Western rhetoric around the way that China runs its economy. It sees parallels with Russia, China being an emerging market, physical proximity and ideological proximity. So I think the rally driven by international investors would not be as big as it would be for other geographies because of that limited amount of international investor interest. Having said all that, what we can see is we've got a new administration being formed in China. We've yet to meet the main actors in that administration. Mm. But what we do know is there could be some changes in the governance of the PBOC. It could lead to monetary loosening, and that could be good for markets.
And we've been talking about the reopening. And of course, the other big risk for markets is recessions to the recessionary fears globally. You see a mechanical bottom in Asian stocks sometime in the weeks ahead. Then when do we see a big rally, and when do you start to see some very solid rallies coming through across Asian equities?
Well, much of this is linked to the U.S., and here at Nomura, we're expecting a further 3 incremental rate hikes by the Fed between now and the middle of next year. Now, markets always anticipate recovery, and with those 3 rate hikes, we do assume there is a technical U.S. recession. So at some point at the beginning of next year, investors, in our view, should be prepared for positioning themselves for a rally in Asian equities.
Jim, what are you seeing in Japan? You mentioned you're just back from a visit there, and I'm curious as to how the economy is holding up. We looked at some eco data earlier. Salaries in the month of September were up about 2.1% from last year's. Seems a pretty healthy clip.
Yeah, well, Japan's had a trouble with 35 years of price declines and stable wages. It's had this incredibly loose monetary policy, which has been criticized by the U.S. in particular, and that's been reflected in the exchange rate. But all of a sudden, we're beginning to see inflationary pressures in Japan, which is actually what the BOJ has been trying to stimulate over the course of the last few years. So that's positive. But I think the major thing we're seeing is that a lot of investors do want to have some exposure to China without actually buying Chinese equities. And for that reason, they're looking to Japan. And for Japan, China is Japan's single biggest trading partner. And many Japanese companies have a big chunk of the revenue originated in countries such as China. And a lot of our analysts have been asked by investors, which Japanese companies do we buy which give us exposure to China without some of the governance risks or some of the asset owners' inability to allow investors to hold Chinese equities.
Can you tell us what some of those are?
I would love to tell you what some of those are, but sadly our compliance people won't allow me
okay.
to do that.
Well, I tried. Let's go in terms of some of your other views that you've got. You prefer EM Asia financials over the developed markets here. Why is that?
Well, in terms of financials, when we see interest rates moving up, there tends to be an expansion in something called the net interest margin, which tends to lead to upgrades in terms of earnings for these banks. Now, in Asia, in terms of the banking industry, developed market exposure you can get through things like HSBC, things like DBS in Singapore. But for EM, you start to look at the Korean banks, you start to look at the Taiwanese banks, look at the Indonesian banks or some of the banks in India. And with the interest rate cycle moving the way it's moving right now, that expansion in interest rate margin will see earnings upgrades, and that's one of the reasons we like banks.
So the move in interest rates where the Fed has been concerned is really one of the big factors in powering the dollar higher. But over the last five or six trading days, let's say since the beginning of November, we've seen a lot of volatility in the U.S. currency. And I think since the first of the year, if you look at the Bloomberg Dollar Spot Index, we're down a little more than 1.3%. Jim, what's the path of the dollar from here?
Okay, our view is that the dollar has had some great gains, but it still has this world safe haven currency status. It's still a market which is accompanied by a very aggressive Fed, which is indicated to investors and commentators that it will really identify inflation as the number one demon that needs to be killed. And with three fairly assertive rate hikes between now and the middle of next year, we see the dollar continue to stay strong.
All right, Jim McCafferty, head of APAC Equity Research at Nomura, joining us from Hong Kong, and Nomura economists coming through with that note yesterday that they expect a slower pace of Federal Reserve interest rate increases, but a longer cycle and a higher peak rate. Nomura economists seeing a peak Fed rate of 5.5% to 5.75%.